A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
The camera follows a woman as she walks through a house. She heads down a hallway, then through a garage. Outside, she approaches a man wearing dark glasses, holding open the back door of an SUV.
Hey, Josh.
She gets into the car.
What's happening?
Josh makes sure she is inside, then he shuts the door.
Thank you.
Next, driving. The passenger is revealed to be Michelle Obama.
Well, I usually listen to my music.
She unravels some earbuds.
This is what I do in the car. I have an eclectic taste of music. It depends on the mood, whether I want to be inspired or whether I just want to thump it out. Hit me.
She plays music from her phone.
How y'all doing this evening? How y'all doing this evening? Do y'all want that bounce? Do y'all want that
sometimes
bounce?
Sometimes you need a little bounce.
I said, do y'all want that bounce? That bounce?
View from inside the car of a sunny winter day. Michelle nods her head to the beat. Words appear, a Netflix original documentary. Flashback, a presidential motorcade. Then, President Obama and Michelle walk down a street waving to the crowds. Credits, in association with Higher Ground Productions and Big Mouth Productions. Michelle in the car. Then a flashback of the First Lady enjoying marching bands at a parade.
I can't hear y'all. Everybody sing. Woo! And it don't stop.
Flashback of Michelle looking proud as her husband takes the oath of office at his inauguration. A view of the massive crowd waving thousands of flags. Flashback of a motorcade arriving at the White House. The Obama family gets out of their car. Title, Becoming. Flashback, Michelle puts her arm around one of her daughters as they enter the White House, along with dozens of staff and Secret Service. Now present, Michelle heads down a hallway and enters a room. The walls are covered in white floor-to-ceiling drapes.
Hey.
She sees a cake on a table.
Wow.
Gotta have a book cake.
Get a picture of our book cake.
The cake looks exactly like Michelle's book, Becoming.
Wow. How do they do this kind of stuff?
I wonder who did this.
Her mother, Marion Shields Robinson, approaches.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it, lady. She's gonna touch it. Go sit down.
Next, they enter the upper seating area of an empty arena.
These stairs.
Yep.
Oh, I can see.
I got you, too.
Okay, now you all, we can walk a little fast.
Okay, all right, big stuff.
They head down to the lower levels. The word Chicago is projected on a screen on stage. Words appear. 2 years after leaving the White House, the former First Lady Michelle Obama goes on tour for the release of her memoir, Becoming. Now in the backstage room, Michelle smiles as she watches a slideshow. It includes candid photos of her and the president together. Chief of Staff Melissa Winter enters the room and joins Michelle and others.
It's full, I mean, like the rafters. I just saw my family and I got a little
beklempt.
Later, they all hold hands in a circle.
Heavenly Father, thank you for this moment. Thank you for all that you have done to bring us to this point. It's a privilege to have this opportunity, and we know that you have a greater purpose for all of us. In your name we pray.
Amen.
You okay, Mel? All right, I'm not gonna touch your clothes.
Michelle gives Melissa a little neck rub.
Love you, sweetie.
Me too.
Way to go.
Melissa looks emotional.
You don't have to keep it together. You don't have to go. You can cry your eyes out. I can't do that right now.
No.
Okay.
Next, Michelle waits to head out on stage as Oprah Winfrey introduces her.
Hello, Chicago! She served our country as the 44th First Lady of the United States. She made us always feel like the White House was really our house, the people's house. She is your hometown girl from the south side of Chicago. Welcome, Michelle Obama!
The camera follows Michelle as she takes the stage, waving to the crowd with both hands. The audience is on their feet. Michelle and Oprah sit in chairs on stage.
Okay, everybody. We're home.
We're home.
Yeah, feels good. I gotta say,
can we talk about leaving the White House? When you got on the helicopter, did you think, free at last, free at last? Or did you, or was it bittersweet, or what was it?
Yeah, it was that whole day was a trip, first of all. For so many reasons. So what was happening on our last day was that Sasha's and Malia's friends, who had grown up in the White House, came to me that night and was like, we want a sleepover. And I'm like, what? You want a sleepover? We miss being here. We want our last breakfast. Because you can get what you want to eat at the White House. So all those little girls were like, I think I'll have the fried chicken biscuit and I'm gonna have the waffle. So this is what, we're trying to move and then they wake up and I gotta get them out. It's like, come on, wake up. The Trumps are coming. You got to get up, get out, you know? And there are tears and there's crying and the staff is crying and I'm trying not to cry because I said if I walk out there crying, they're gonna swear I'm crying for a different reason.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm like, we have got to get it together. So it was a very emotional day. But then we got on Air Force One and when I got on the plane, I think I sobbed.
You did?
For 30 minutes. And I think it was just the release of 8 years of trying to do everything perfectly.
Flashback footage of the president and first lady walking a red carpet up the steps to Air Force One. Then, a photo of the family when the girls were little.
One day you're a normal family, an election happens, and your life changes instantly. It's like we're shot out of a cannon.
Photos and videos from Election Day.
We didn't have time to like adjust to it.
Being the First Lady has been the greatest honor in my life.
Scene of the Obamas surrounded by reporters.
But how many people are in that position where the entire attention of everything is you? Every gesture you make, every blink of an eye is being analyzed.
Footage of Michelle addressing a convention.
You have the world watching every move you make. Your life isn't yours anymore.
Now, a view of Michelle in silhouette. She sits on a windowsill in a hotel suite looking out at New York Harbor. The Statue of Liberty is visible in the distance. Voiceover.
The whole idea of doing the tour is to be able to have the time to actually reflect, to figure out what just happened to me.
A stylist works on her hair.
It's kind of the panic moment of, yeah, this is totally me. Unplugged for the first time in a long time.
Secret Service and other staff wait out in the hallway. Michelle waits inside, then a woman enters. The woman picks up two bags in the foyer.
And now I can leave. See, this is not normal. Now I can lock out of my door.
The entourage exits the building through the hotel kitchen.
Good morning. Thank you. Thanks so much, you all. Morning.
Love you both.
Thanks so much.
The hotel staff wave at the camera. When Michelle exits to a waiting vehicle, she's greeted by a cheering crowd. She waves and gets into the car. Interview.
When we started talking about touring, I visualized ahead, okay, how are we gonna do this? How do we reach the most people? How do we reach kids? And before you knew it, it was just a big thing.
In a living room, Michelle meets with Melissa and other staff. Michelle studies a multi-page document. Melissa.
We have a 3-day swing that takes us to Tacoma, Portland, and Phoenix.
So it's
finding,
hard to...
prepping, doing travel arrangements, and all that stuff for 21 different moderators is an enormous amount of work.
This is where it's like, I don't know the hassle, but it would be more interesting to have more people and different people. It would make for a better show.
No explanation needed.
Do any of those other men jump out at you, like Seth, James, Conan, Justin Bieber?
I watch.
What?
But when I think of somebody, it's like curiosity and energy and sort of a Gail, you know?
I'm becoming
Gail King, preparing her intro.
More comfortable saying no, more confident saying yes,
and more willing to say
what's on my mind.
What's on my mind?
What's on my mind?
On stage with Conan O'Brien.
First male moderator.
We're really testing this out, Conan.
Scenes of other moderators.
Knowing how to engage an interview is it's a skill.
It's a skill.
In the meeting.
I mean, Colbert is the best.
Yeah.
He will get into some dangerous territory.
On stage.
Now, before you guys were in the White House, did he ever get up and get you coffee in bed on Mother's Day?
Nah.
Another moderator.
We are here to talk about a book.
Oh, it's a book. Isn't that something?
All of these people are here because you wrote.
Nobody's twerking.
No, there's no twerking.
We are reading.
That's right. That's right.
More scenes from the tour. Voiceover.
What I experience in these big arenas is the power of gathering.
She poses for photos with fans.
We're sharing a set of experiences.
Scenes of fans waiting at a bookstore.
Oh my God. Yes. I'm so pumped. I know, just look at
The camera follows Michelle's entourage as they make their way between bookshelves. They enter a large room at the back of the store. Excited fans wait in line to have their books signed. Michelle signs a book for a pregnant fan.
How's everybody doing? When are you due?
In 4 weeks.
Oh my gosh! Do you know what you're having?
Yeah, a girl. Yeah.
Strong girl.
She shakes the woman's hand.
Sir, how are you?
My dog.
Next, a man.
You have a Sasha.
Yeah.
Is she sassy like mine?
Huge.
A young woman.
Hi, it's so nice to see you.
Look at you. Did you do this for me?
Of course.
You
just, I had to
you're
put
just
it on.
Fabulous.
How
are you, ma'am?
A senior woman.
It's so nice to see you.
Meet you.
Thank you for taking the time to be here.
A young girl.
Hi, bright eyes. How are you?
A young man.
I'm in college. I'm going to be a graphic designer.
Excellent. All right, stay on it, okay?
Thank you for coming.
Proud of you.
Thank you.
All right.
Voiceover.
It's like an emotional, sociological dance with people.
How are you?
It's important to make sure I take every person as they come up.
A mother and daughter.
How are you guys doing?
So good to see you.
This is my daughter.
Christine.
How old are you, babe?
I'm 13.
Oh my goodness, school's going well.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody walks up to me, don't look around, don't look beyond them. Look them in the eye, take in the story.
Voiceover.
Your story about your daughters, your moms, who are going through postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And just hearing your story is such a blessing. So I thank you and God bless you so much.
You have children?
Yes, I have 1 year old.
Voiceover.
Sharing somebody's story gives me perspective that I need, that I don't get because all my interactions are kind of sanitized.
The next person in line.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to meet
you. Are you guys students?
Yes, we are. We're all undergrads.
So this is how I relate to people, and it helps me stay connected.
A fan tries to compose herself.
Oh my goodness, don't make me cry. I just got this face done.
Catch a breath, take a breath.
What's your name?
Teresa.
Teresa.
I so admire
you. Oh my goodness, thank you so much.
This was unexpected.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
What did you think was going to happen?
Next, Michelle hosts a community event at the African American Museum in Philadelphia.
Cool. I'm getting caught up on what you guys do.
She hugs a young woman. Voiceover.
I crave some longer experiences with young people through the community events. The tour could do a great job of giving me a little taste of it.
At the event.
How do you feel, like, how do I put this? How do you feel transitioning back to your normal life because, like, it got I don't want to say interrupted, but it was, like a huge bump in the road because you thought you were just going to live this normal life, and then all of a sudden your husband became president. Yeah. So how does it feel like trying to get back on track of your normal life that you had before?
What I've learned is that get back on what track? It's a whole new track. It's not going back. It's not, you know, it's just all different, and it's different forever. So it's not getting back on track, but it's creating my next track. I'm doing what you're doing. I'm figuring out What do I want to do? What do I care about? And it takes time to process your life and figure out what it all means. So little of who I am happened in those 8 years. So much more of who I was happened before.
Later, the camera follows Michelle and her entourage down a hallway and into a room for a television interview with Gayle King. Michelle and her mother sit across from Gayle.
Mrs. Obama's ready. I'm ready too.
Gayle interviews Marion.
So tell us about Michelle Obama as a little girl, because she says she was feisty, mm-hmm. and that part of you really liked her feistiness, true?
I did. Well, it goes back to Craig. Uh-huh. I think I was too soft with him, trying to make him the nice little boy.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't think that works, so I decided I would just let her do her thing.
Craig sits with Melissa in the next room.
It made me too soft. She was too strict.
Your sister took the brunt of that. I hope you feel bad.
The interview is broadcast.
Do you feel you have your life back? Do you miss
I
the
do.
White House at all?
No.
No,
not at all.
After the interview.
All right, bye, team.
Okay, all right.
I'll see you guys tonight. Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay, all right.
Bye, Marion.
Later, Michelle joins Craig, Melissa, and Marion.
Oh, I thought you were wearing the pink John.
No, that was for that's earlier, like, and that had food on it. That's the evening. That was for the day.
That looks like two belts.
It's one belt, but it's three separate.
Oh, it's got a top belt, too. Yeah, oh, I see. But it's not separated?
No, it's one belt, but you buckle it three different times.
And is that the style to have your belt so high now? Is that the style?
I don't know.
I just asked.
Don't buy
it. That was the style.
Zip it.
No, that was a compliment. I like the belt up that high.
Yeah, I don't know what people.
It looks like a holster.
I don't know what people do.
You could. So when I
you shouldn't laugh.
That's exactly how I go.
That's the problem. Come on, Craig.
At an arena show, Craig is in the audience.
My brother, my big brother, he was my first crush, my big brother. My brother is the kind of person that everybody liked Craig. My mother liked Craig better than me. I joke about this all the time, but, we would have Thanksgiving at the White House, and I'd be around, there'd be butlers and stuff going on, and where's Craig? But when's Craig coming? And I was like, Ma, come on, lady. I am the first lady. What more do I have to do?
Interview, Craig.
Everybody in the world knows who she is. That's incredible. Everybody in the world knows who my sister is. What is that? That's dumb. Nobody should have to deal with that. No one. No brother should have to deal with their sister being the most popular person in the world.
Next, two SUVs arrive at Craig's house. He and his wife go outside to greet Michelle, Marion, Melissa, and the rest of the entourage.
Ooh, it's chilly.
Hey,
mommy.
Chilly. Sorry for the snow.
Yeah. Take you on a tour?
They head inside.
And if it weren't you, we'd be able to put the blinds up.
Yeah.
Look at
preference. She allowed to
Michelle sleep. Lifts the blinds and looks outside.
Are those people terrorists? Are they no.
See, that's not right, Mish.
Marion.
Craig always has a good supply of wine.
Craig's wife, Kelly, serves food.
I love coming here drinking his wine.
I have wine, too.
Did you see it? China, you just saw it.
I got wine, too.
That's right. I get the special wine. Mish just gets White House wine.
When I come to Craig's house.
That's right, Mom. You tell her.
I just get the wine. It's just I'm gonna have some of this wine.
Here's some of my wine.
Refill mine.
Later, they look at photo albums.
These are my favorite pictures.
Childhood Christmas photos.
God, that tree looks ugly.
Could you actually let us decorate the tree? That's why it looks ugly. Because a 7-year-old did that.
Oh, here's
the... Oh, there's the dress.
There's a full gown.
You can see all this pleats. Look how pretty you are, Mommy.
You could have been on TV.
Marion's black and white wedding photos.
Were you excited about your wedding?
I think so.
At least you weren't pregnant, because I didn't come to
I
wedding.
I believe
later.
I might have been happy about it.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but that was good. That was good.
You know, the last time we've gone through these pictures like this, it had to be when Dad was alive.
Mm-hmm. He just liked people.
Look how handsome Dad is.
Family photos, then various school photos of Michelle and Craig through the years. A photo of Michelle on a cheerleading team.
I am from the south side of Chicago.
Interview.
That tells you as much about me as you need to know. It was a typical working class community. Some good music, some good barbecue, some good times.
More family photos. A barbecue, Michelle and Craig playing outside. Craig holding trophies.
Our dinner table was the first table I felt like I belonged.
More photos of Michelle as a child.
And then you go out into the world expecting the same thing.
During the arena tour, on stage with a moderator.
You're in high school. You are accomplished. You was a class treasurer, do I remember that right?
I was senior class treasurer, yes. I was still that kid.
You were on the honor roll. And you went to go see your guidance counselor, and your brother had gone to Princeton, and you thought, well, I'm gonna aspire to go to Princeton too. But that guidance counselor had other ideas, mm-hmm. didn't see in you what you saw in yourself.
Yeah. She decided that my wish to go to Princeton was thinking too big. I was reaching too high, and at that point she told me, I don't think you're Princeton material.
The nerve.
Yeah. Well, she was wrong. I went back to the school just recently and the principal was like, she doesn't work here anymore. I was like, I bet she doesn't. I share that because obviously it worked out okay. But that statement, while I was able to get over it, it was a punch. I'm still a little salty.
That's right.
About that. Still a little salty about it.
Next, at a community event, Michelle meets with college students.
Your book really stuck to me. Mm-hmm. How just so much that African-American women go through and African-American individuals just go through as a whole. Mm-hmm. And we go through those alone. We don't have backup. We don't have support. Mm-hmm. And then with me being a first-generation student, I've lived in subsidized housing all my life. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe that I would be sitting next to the former First Lady of the United States. And I just wanted to know, how did you, as a Black woman, persevere through just invisibility?
For me, I never felt invisible. And I think in thinking through my story about why do I not now feel invisible, I think it's because my parents made me always feel visible. It came from the simple truth, not what was going on in the world, but what was going on in my dinner table. My mother, she let us ask anything. You had to be polite. We got spankings if we were too, you know. She was still a Black mother. But that invisibility, it starts here. We can't afford to wait for the world to be equal, to start feeling seen. We're far from it. Just time will not allow it. It's not going to happen with one president, one vote. So you got to find the tools within yourself to feel visible and to be heard and to use your voice.
The young men and women nod thoughtfully while listening to her. Interview.
I have high expectations of young people. It's the same expectations my family had of me.
Photo of her grandparents.
My grandfather, Dandy, expected us to be great. But he went through life being underestimated.
Portrait of a young dandy wearing a uniform.
Growing up, he was a brilliant young man, somebody that loved to read books, loved to delve into things in a deep and meaningful way.
Various photos of Dandy.
He could have been a professor, he could have been a doctor. But because of race and class, he couldn't get into colleges. He didn't have the money, the resources. And imagine walking around with all this ability and the world telling you no. No, you're not good enough. No, you're not ready. Watching people half your intelligence being promoted past you. You know, watching opportunities slip away, not because you're not able, but because nobody thinks you deserve it. That caused him a lot of disappointment and anger that made him push us to be better.
Photo of Dandy holding baby Michelle. Next, a community event in St. Paul, Minnesota. Michelle meets with a group of women in a house.
Super normal Wednesday. Very normal.
Moderator.
Every so often a book comes along that creates bridges.
Yeah.
So we thought it was a great idea to bring two book clubs together to talk about their unique experiences with the book, but also the common things. You come from Chicago also.
Where'd you grow up?
My mom's from Gresham.
Yeah, that's where Barack organized. Yeah.
But it was fascinating to read because they were lifelong. They lived there. They grew up there. Family there. Steeped there. And they were definitely part of the white flight.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of what they were fleeing when they decided to leave?
Or did they even know?
I don't know that my parents did. If you look at my parents' parents, that's when you see, like, the veiled racism. Mm-hmm. That's when you would hear the off-the-cuff remarks about, like, well, they're moving into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting to read that from your perspective versus what I knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On stage.
What was going on in the 70s was that as black families like ours were moving into neighborhoods, white families were being scared away. They were being told, sell your home quick, your property values are gonna go down. And so they fled further to the suburbs.
A class photo.
You can even see it in class pictures of my kindergarten class and my eighth grade class. I mean, it does something to kids like me, and we have to remember that as we are pointing out people who belong and don't belong. Because my family, sadly, was one of those families to some who didn't belong.
Photo of Michelle as a college student. Interview.
I ended up going to Princeton. I was one of a handful of minority students. It was the first time in my life where I stood out like that.
More college photos of Michelle.
I learned that one of my roommates moved out because her mother was horrified that I was black. She felt her daughter was in danger.
Photo of college-age Michelle sitting on a chair.
I wasn't prepared for that.
Her legs and arms are folded, and she is looking downward, on stage.
In hindsight, I think I needed to go to Princeton to see for myself what was all this that I wasn't good enough for.
Gail King.
And then you're in class with some of these guys, and you realize what?
Well, they're not that smart. Yeah. And it's not even just an image that we have, it's an image that we're given. People have told us, no, these are the things that aren't for you. So one of the most empowering things as a young person was to go to one of the top schools and realize that there are all kinds of affirmative action. You know, there's legacy.
Yes.
There's there's the college athlete. Mm-hmm. And universities have a right and an interest in diversifying. The problem is that when it comes to students of color, poor kids, all of a sudden that's affirmative action.
Yes.
And that's a problem.
And they're lesser than.
And they're lesser than. Yes. And I have been at probably every powerful table there is in the world. I've been at G summits, I've been in castles and palaces, in boardrooms, in academic universities.
Can I drop the microphone?
And I'm coming down from the...
Gail drops her mic.
Yes.
You know, I am coming down from the mountaintop to tell every young person that is poor and working class and has been told, regardless of the color of your skin, that you don't belong, don't listen to them. They don't even know how they got at those seats.
Yes.
They don't know.
Next, a community event at a high school in Chicago. Girls cheer in a circle.
O-L-P-H-I-N-S.
Moderator.
Some of these young women that we selected for this activity today asked the question, why me? Like, you chose me, why? Well that's why not? Yeah.
So how many of you thought that? Like, why me?
Student,
there's
Elizabeth Cervantes.
Who I feel like, they are president of this club, they're ACT, SAT is this, whatever, right? I just literally come to school, I do whatever I have to do, and then I stay for one club, and that's Latinos Unidos, and then I leave, and then I go to work.
And why do you work?
My dad, he had an accident. He doesn't work like he used to. Helping him out in some way would make him feel good. And also, because I have three little brothers, everything that I do is for them. I go to work and I bring them food. Like everything.
And she wonders why she's here. That story, with all the highs and lows and what seems so ordinary and what seems like nothing to you, is your power.
Another day, Elizabeth enters the academic building at her school, the Whitney M. Young Magnet High School.
Oof, last day.
Inside, students are writing in each other's yearbooks. Elizabeth waves to someone across the room.
Chris! Over here! Do you have your yearbook?
Voiceover, Elizabeth.
I am a senior at Whitney Young here in the south side of Chicago. And I am a Mexican girl.
Girl, I don't got pens.
I literally just had a jail pen.
This is my last week of high school. I remember the first day, I was like, I want to transfer to a different school. I can't do this work. Just putting myself down.
Yeah, sorry.
What kept me motivated was here. You get to be friends with people that are completely different from you, from different parts of the world. And I'm very thankful for that.
She hugs a friend.
Girl, you always
later, she dons a cap and gown.
Knowing that I'm one of the first ones to graduate high school is just very important for my family and I.
Elizabeth Cervantes.
Her father looks proud as Elizabeth crosses the stage and receives her diploma.
I'm very excited about what the future holds, and going to college, it's a huge accomplishment for me.
After the ceremony, her father hugs her. Now, scenes of arena staff preparing the stage for Michelle's event. Backstage, the moderator is briefed.
When you come out, you'll say, "Hello, Washington, D.C." You know, however you would want to maybe identify yourself. I'm, you know, worked with the Obamas. I'm, you know, an advisor for the Obamas for years. I'm Valerie Jarrett. I'm your host tonight. Just mm-hmm. to just do a little establishing.
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
Cool. And then she comes up here. Yeah, you are in this chair. She's in that chair. And so you guys can hug, wave, sit, converse.
Rehearsal.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Michelle Obama.
Later, Valerie puts her arm around Michelle's waist as they head for the stage. The arena seats are now fully occupied.
I was in my 20s. I was a lawyer. And up until that point, I had been what I describe in the book as a box checker. I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do. You know, I was an A student. I got the star. And that landed me from Princeton to Harvard to a firm without really thinking about what I cared about.
You start practicing law, and then out of nowhere comes a young man with a very peculiar name, and you were supposed to be his mentor.
And then I had to call him on the phone. This is when at first I had a little hint that there might be a little something more there. He's like, "Hello?" And he's got that Barack Obama voice that did not match the nerdy image I had in my head. And I was sort of like, whoa. I really was like, whoa, the heat was coming out of the phone from that voice. But then he was late, and I was like, trifling black man, late on the first day. He flashed that smile, and he was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I was late. I wasn't equipped with an umbrella." You know, and I started going, okay. And he was walking by, all the secretaries were looking at me like,
she makes the okay sign, then a thumbs up.
I was like, I know, girl. Like, get him in the office.
In the lower levels of the Washington Arena, Barack Obama enters with an entourage. Arena staff applaud and cheer.
Obama!
And it's fun listening to her tell these stories.
Yeah.
Some of which are, you know, it's fun as I like, hold on a second.
Wait, that's not exactly how it happened.
On stage.
But because he was my advisee, I was like, yeah, no, we're not dating. Because he asked me out probably a month in, and I was like, dude, that would be so tacky. The two black people from Harvard, you know? I was like, that's just what they're waiting for. It's like, you guys love each other, don't you? You're black, he's black, this would be great. I was not gonna fall into that stereotype.
Chicago, Gail.
But how do you fall for a guy who's driving a yellow Datsun, yellow, with a hole in the floor that when you're driving, you can see the street as you're moving?
I mean, this was love, y'all.
And one day you guys are hanging out and it's in the middle of the night and you see him and he's staring off into space and you're thinking, I wonder if he's thinking about moi. Mm. And you said, what are you thinking about?
It could be like income inequality or the fate of the black community. I was like, oh, how romantic.
Yeah. He was a different kind of dude from the very beginning.
He was very different. And he was different from me. And he challenged me in different ways. I knew he was a tsunami coming after me. And if I didn't get my act together, I would be swept up. I didn't want to just be an appendage to his dreams. Mm-hmm. So that forced me to work and think and make decisions like leaving law.
Washington, Valerie.
Speaking of your husband.
President Obama enters the stage carrying a bouquet of flowers, a standing ovation from the crowd. He leans over and kisses Michelle as he presents her with the flowers. He sits on the arm of her chair.
It's like, you know, when Jay-Z comes out, during the Beyonce concert, young B-N-R-O-C.
Uh-oh. Oh, good Lord, stop it.
You know, it's in Crazy in Love, it's the same thing. It's just a little sample to enhance the concert. There are a couple of things I would correct.
You don't have to do that here. It's my book.
That's my point.
It's my book, my version of reality.
And we have to drive home together.
Now, a montage of photos of Michelle and Barack as a couple throughout the years, including photos of them as young adults and at their wedding. Then, individual photos of younger Barack and Michelle. Voiceover.
My relationship with Barack was all about our partnership. If I was gonna have an equal voice with this very opinionated man, I had to get myself up. I had to set myself off to a place where I was confident that I was going to be his equal.
Interview.
The thing that really changed it was the birth of our children.
Photos of Barack and Michelle with babies.
I wasn't really ready for that. That really made it harder.
More family photos.
Something had to give. And it was my aspirations and dreams. I made that concession, not because he said, you have to quit your job, but it felt like, I can't do all of this. So I have to tone down my aspirations. I have to dial it back.
In Chicago, the arena audience is riveted. Gail.
You shared that you went to marital counseling, which I think is so important.
Counseling helped me to look at how do I take control of my own happiness within our marriage. But it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. It is hard blending two lives together.
Did the marital counseling help? I went to 5 marriage counselors. It didn't help me. What was the name of yours? I should have gone to your guy. That's what I should have done. So did it help? Because, you think, you go to marital counseling and you think that they're going to tell you he's right or you're right.
Yeah,
or you're
well,
wrong.
And in my view, I took Barack to marital counseling so that they fix him.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he started looking over at me, and I was like, why are you talking to me? I am perfect. He is the problem. But one of the things I learned that helped me, and I think helped our marriage, was that my happiness is not dependent on him making me happy.
Bravo, yes.
You know, and sometimes I felt that that was one of the rubs. My resentment for him was that Barack was prioritizing himself. In a way, it's like, we had babies, he was at the gym. I was like, how you find time to work out?
Yes. Yes.
I was like, so let me stop being mad at him for going to gym and let me get to the gym, you know?
In Washington, Barack puts his arm around Michelle as they head out of the arena together.
Do you feel like a show that you would want to see?
Yeah. You're just a good storyteller. I think. Thank you, guys.
It was amazing tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks.
They get into a waiting vehicle. Next, footage of the Obama family from the 2008 campaign. A crowd greets them in Cedar Falls, Iowa.
Good afternoon. Can you all, Good afternoon. This is the Obamas. This guy you'll hear from later, Barack. Sasha, or better known as Natasha, and Malia, and I am Michelle Obama. I'm married to this guy.
Next, Barack addresses the crowd.
She is fantastic. She really is.
Footage of Michelle visiting a public library in Indianola, Iowa in 2008. She consults Melissa.
Not today.
Interview, Melissa.
There was something about Michelle Obama. I quit a job that I had been in for 10 years to go work for her. As a friend, I have been by her side for almost all of this.
Michelle with Melissa.
See, some beats are just good.
She moves to the beat. Melissa searches for music on her phone, then hands it to Michelle.
Yes. Oh, good Lord. Do you know Melissa loves Barry Manilow? And I don't even know why we're friends. We couldn't be more opposite.
That's why we're friends.
Footage from 2008, Melissa with Michelle in Londonderry, New Hampshire.
Having watched her begin this journey, being so nervous, you know, she wasn't crazy about the process. She doesn't like politics. And here we were dragging her around Iowa.
Footage of Michelle at a campaign rally and in a campaign office.
For the first year of the campaign, it was exhausting and not glamorous. And we ate a lot of McDonald's.
More 2008 campaign footage.
And she'd lose her voice by the end of the day because that's how hard we were working her. She was that valuable.
Footage of the Obama family greeting a crowd of supporters.
She said to me, I don't know if this country is ready for someone like my husband. I hope they are, but they may not be.
On stage in Chicago, Gail.
Here you are on the campaign trail, and the way that you were vilified in the press, the way you were misinterpreted in the press, really was a horrible time that I think many of us really were not aware.
Yeah, because I was going around the country doing big, huge rallies. It was so much fun.
Footage from a rally.
Please join me in welcoming Michelle Obama and the Democratic Party's nominee.
But then the attack started.
Fox News footage.
A fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab. The gesture everyone seems to interpret differently.
I was becoming effective in the campaign, so they went after me like they went after a candidate.
It blindsided me.
Fox News footage.
One way people are going to try to defeat Obama is if they can't prove he's a Muslim, then let's prove his wife is an angry black woman. And I think it's going to get ugly.
She's out on the campaign trail. She's making speeches on behalf of her husband. She's fair game.
CNN.
One of her biggest hurdles will be defining herself before anybody else does.
Over the course of the campaign, I was telling my story. I was being vulnerable.
Campaign rally.
Let me tell you something. For the first time in my adult lifetime, I'm really proud of my country. And not just because Barack has done well, but because I think people are hungry for change.
Interview.
And to have that distorted, it just felt so wrong.
Fox News.
Does Michelle Obama dislike America?
I think that she's got a chip on her shoulder.
She's got this Stokely Carmichael in a designer dress thing going. Her instinct is to start with this blame America, you know, I'm the victim. If that's
speaking her mind can get her into trouble.
She looks like an angry woman.
She's not warm and fuzzy.
She's whining. She's adding fuel to the old boy network.
And Michelle's going to have to think about what it is she's become in her life.
Michelle looks downcast as she watches the footage.
I stop talking off the cuff. I stop talking freely. I use teleprompters. I had to be much more scripted than I had ever been before.
Footage of Michelle looking unhappy.
I was just sort of waking up to the truth of who we can be
so ready to assume the worst in people.
Unflattering editorial cartoon and magazine cover.
The only thing I can do is share that that does hurt. Because if we walk around pretending like it doesn't hurt, the perpetrators just say, oh, I was just joking. It's just politics. It's like, no. That changes the shape of a person's soul.
View of Michelle sitting in a backstage tent alone, looking thoughtful. Then the camera follows two SUVs on a Chicago highway. Next, the vehicles travel into a residential neighborhood. They pull over on a quiet street in front of a small house with a chain link fence. Michelle and Marion get out of one of the SUVs. They hold hands as they head into the house. Inside, they walk around from room to room. View from the doorway of a child's bedroom.
It's important to have a place that you know as your home.
Family photo collages on a wall.
One place where people know you, they've seen you grow up, where people don't have to make up a story about who you are. It's what keeps me grounded.
Now, Michelle stands at a window in an empty room. She leans on the windowsill and looks outside thoughtfully.
And this tree has been here forever. This was the tree where I had one of my first kisses.
A view of the large tree. Next, Michelle plays a piano.
That's it.
Marion.
She always played everything over and over and over again, like it had to be perfect.
Next, they head upstairs.
The bulb is burned out.
Okay.
You can tell it's stale in here.
They enter a room that is mostly empty, except for a couch and recliner.
This was the living room, and this is the radiator that Mom turned into a chimney for Christmas.
Childhood photo.
And there used to be mirrors on this wall to make this look bigger. I was a teenager here, and Barack and I lived here for a year together.
She sits in the recliner.
But this is my dad's chair. He always had some version of this recliner where he would sit and hold court. And when we all lived here, his stereo system would be lined up there with his speakers and all of his jazz albums. And the couch was kind of that way. And he would sit for hours just playing. He would get into his mood where he just want to hear his jazz. You know, he fills up this space.
Michelle and her mother look thoughtful. Marion.
I think about all that we did. And I think about my husband and him. I always think about him coming home from work, coming up those stairs.
Mm-hmm. But him coming up those stairs is like God returning home.
Photo of Michelle's father, then a montage of photos of him with Michelle as a young girl in the living room and the backyard. Voiceover.
My father had MS. It's a disease that slowly deteriorates the body. I can't help but think of that time right before his death when he, you know, struggled to get out that back door just to get to work. Not giving up, not in the least.
Photo of Michelle's father at work, then a family photo. Michelle wears a cap and gown. Her father is holding crutches.
While his death was sudden, it was always looming. The pain of losing him is an emptiness I still haven't gotten over.
More family photos.
I think about all that he gave us and all that he wasn't able to see.
Wedding photo of Michelle and Barack. Then, a photo of the Obama family when the girls were little. Interview.
He had a way of making people that he was with feel his presence. He just made people feel loved.
In the Chicago house, a view of the unoccupied recliner. Later, the SUVs drive away from the house. A view from the front door, looking at the sidewalk, street, and neighbors' houses beyond the chain link fence. Now, at a community event, Michelle sits in a circle of young women.
My grandmom's from Thailand. A lot of the culture in the house is like kind of influenced by her. And when I was like 5 years old, I was like this little pencil skirt and off the shoulder top.
Yeah, that's why I tell people we focus too much on stats and not story. Stats are like, what college are you from? But your story is like, what was your grandfather like? Who was your favorite relative and why?
Student, Shayla Allen.
What advice would you give to someone who's trying to avoid just becoming a stat? Like, when you go to college, you're not just the kid with a 3.0 GPA. Or when you're applying for jobs, you're not just that person who graduated mm-hmm. top of her class. Like, how do you avoid just becoming a number?
Mm-hmm. I think what makes you more than a stat is once you see yourself. You see yourself as more than a stat, and you start thinking about, who are you? What do you care about? What brings you joy? And I hope my story urges you to see the power of your story and to own that.
Now, Shayla rides a bus. Voiceover.
Now that I'm going into my senior year, I'm thinking about how to make sure you're doing the right things. So read Michelle Obama's book, we see that she just slowly started to assert herself and all those insecurities just become like...
Interview.
Small voices.
Next, at home with her mother and brother, voiceover.
Reading about how her family works. And I was like, wow.
Interview. She mimes her head exploding.
Wow. That's our family.
Is this just fantasy?
At home with her family.
In the morning time, we dance through our morning routine. I mean, we'll just dance through the hallways.
Shayla's mother.
If they're up and they're pleasant and they're having a good morning, we're playing some music, you're kind of in good spirits, so.
It helps everybody shake off the cobwebs. Yesterday's mistake, it's a new day.
Shayla's mother sprays Shayla's hair. Voiceover.
The sacrifices my mom would make makes me think like, all right, just strive to do what you can and just be prepared for whatever life throws at you.
I love you. I love you too. Have a good day.
View of Shayla riding the bus.
I want to be successful and I also want to impact somebody.
Now, a view of Michelle looking out the window from the backseat of a moving vehicle. On stage in an arena.
America opened itself up to you.
Yeah.
With that historic election. And I think everybody in this room will remember where they were on that November evening in 2008.
Photo of the Obama family in a hotel room waiting for the election results.
From the minute that the announcement happened, the world changed for us.
Montage of photos from election night. Then on stage with Reese Witherspoon.
People came in with briefing books and world leaders were calling right then and there. So we had to leave the hotel to go to the campaign event, and everything is shut down when the presidential motorcade comes down. The streets are clean, nothing is going on. So it's just us in the motorcade, and Malia's like, no one's coming to your party, Dad. That's what she was saying, and she was like, oh, I feel bad for you.
Footage of the massive crowd of supporters in Chicago on election night. President Obama and his family take the stage. A view of Reverend Jesse Jackson in the crowd with tears in his eyes.
I would not be standing here tonight without the unyielding support of my best friend for the last 16 years. The rock of our family, the love of my life, the nation's next First Lady, Michelle Obama.
The president kisses Michelle and holds her hand as they walk off stage. Footage of citizens celebrating in the streets of Chicago. The crowd in Grant Park continues to cheer and wave flags. The view zooms into a building in the background, in which windows have been lit up to form the letters USA. Next, a view from an airplane in flight. A silver SUV waits on a tarmac. Then, in a hotel room, a security briefing.
We'll take a lot of personal stuff down and come back.
All right, good afternoon. We're going to be leaving the RON to go to the O2 Arena for this evening's event, which right now it was at 93% when we had our walkthroughs earlier. So approximately 15,000, the venue holds 17,500.
Right. And now it's up to 98%. For those of you who've worked these before, it should be the same footprint as far as the build out and everything.
From her hold to the stage is 65 feet. Stage is 5 feet tall, and there's the six stairs to the back. She goes through the hockey tunnel.
Secret Service agent Alan Taylor gets into a passenger seat.
Everything okay, Alan?
Yes, ma'am.
One day I gotta sit, like, and see how the sausage is made. Like, all the pre-stuff that goes into it, I'm just not a part of, you know? But I always ask questions, like, I always wanna know where the guns are. Because what if somebody really was trying to take me out? They'd take these two out first. I could get us to safety, Alan. You guys, yes. I got you covered. I'm always thinking.
I know you could. I'm very confident in that.
Agent Alan. Alan is more like a brother than he is an agent. He was my first experience of having a detail, of being on a detail and having a detail leader. So that's been, that's 12 years of a relationship, if not more. And I've spent a lot of time looking at the back of his head.
Voiceover, Alan.
I've been working with Ms. Obama since 2008.
Flashbacks of Alan with Michelle during the campaign.
Dinner. It's not enough time.
We know.
Over that time, if you're around protectee, you get to know each other very well.
I'll come back to you. I'm gonna win you over.
Stakes are very high on this job. It's a no-fail mission. So you have to get it right 100% of the time.
In a security office, a logo on a screen reads 44 Obama Protective Division. Alan picks up a framed photo from his desk of himself following Michelle down a slide.
We took a trip to the Great Wall in China. It had been planned out that the girls would have the ability to take the slide down. And Ms. Obama saw the slide. She became interested in wanting to do it as well. As you can see, she's smiling and I'm not smiling. But obviously it's a very special photo. It's a fun photo. It's actually one of my favorites. And that's something I always have to pinch myself and say, did I really experience all of that?
Photo of the president and Michelle with Alan in the background, on stage with Stephen Colbert.
What did you think life in the White House was gonna be like before you got in there? Is there any way somebody coming into that house can know?
Families who have the legacy of the White House have some idea. I mean, the Bushes, their daughters were granddaughters in the White House. We were not those people. I didn't know what the residence part of it looked like, but I do know when I went to visit and have tea with Laura Bush, there were butlers there fully dressed in tuxedos, which they wore all the time. Most of them African-American or Latino, older men. What I spent a lot of time thinking about is like, how do I make this mansion with butlers and staff feel like a home for two little girls? Because first of all, I didn't want them grow up thinking that grown African-American men served them in tuxedos, because no, the truth was that some of those men were my uncles and they were the Pullman porters and the folks. And I didn't want my girls to grow up with that image. So we had to change the dress code. It was like, you can't walk around every day in a full tuxedo, you know, cause we girls would have pool parties and play dates and little kids over. And it's like, that just doesn't even look right to me, you know? And you know, I had to beg the housekeepers, these girls have to learn how to clean their own rooms and make their beds and do their laundry. You cannot do this every day because they will not live here forever. And I am not raising kids that don't know how to make a bed, you know? So, of course the girls were like, they make your bed. And it's like, because I'm the first lady and I have a degree.
In a hotel room, Michelle sits in a chair having her makeup done. Later, she puts on earrings, then chooses an outfit from a rack. she checks her final look in a full-length mirror. Voiceover.
As First Lady, I was slowly watching myself being exposed to the world. I had to become more strategic in how I presented myself because it had the potential of defining me for the rest of my life.
In the hotel room.
Fashion for a woman still predominates how people view you. And that's not fair, that's not right, but it's true. That's when fashion isn't just fashion. It's how do you turn it into your tool rather being a victim of it? There's a lot of thought that Meredith Coop puts into it. And I trust Meredith. She's like my sister, daughter, friend, everything.
Fashion stylist and consultant Meredith Coop looks at a bulletin board on which she has several sketches and photos of Michelle in various outfits.
People have these ideas of a first lady look. You're dealing with these outside forces saying things that don't match up with this woman.
Photos of magazine covers featuring Michelle.
So I felt a lot of my work in the White House was more like costume design. Dressing her and her children for this role. And then it's about, let's move the conversation on to what she's doing versus some little fashion detail.
Photos of Michelle, hotel room.
I'd make some impassioned speech and they would say, oh, she was wearing an interesting designer dress. So a lot of it was, okay, let's embrace the fact that people are looking at my shoes, not just highlight me and the clothes, but who we wanted to be as an administration, forward thinking, embracing youth, embracing diversity.
Photos of Michelle meeting with groups of people all over the world. Interview.
Now that we're out of the White House, not to be viewed, judged, and parceled by every other person on the planet. Yeah, it's better. It's absolutely freeing.
She enters a backstage room wearing a yellow satin dress over shiny gold leggings. Meredith.
She is not a minimalist. Like, she's not.
A jacket with embellishment.
And I mean, when I look at this suit, I do see Elvis, and I don't have a problem with that.
Montage of scenes of Michelle wearing a variety of outfits just before she walks on stage. Some are brightly colored, others have fringe or embellishments. In one instance, she wears sparkly silver pumps. When she joins Gayle King on stage in Chicago, she wears a bright purple belted pantsuit. Interview.
I had to shake all that up. But yeah, it's hard to wake up every day and maintain that level of perfection that was absolutely required of me and Barack as the first Black president and first lady.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good night.
All right, you too.
After an event, Michelle is escorted to a vehicle in an arena tunnel. Next, Michelle's car follows a police vehicle with flashing lights. Voiceover.
Our presence in the White House had been celebrated by millions of Americans, but others reacted with fear. When Barack was first elected, various commentators had naively declared that our country was entering a post-racial era in which skin color would no longer matter. Many were overlooking the racism and tribalism that were tearing our nation apart.
A doctored photo of the president as a terrorist, then scenes of anti-Obama rallies. A sign portrays a gallows and reads, "Hang in there, Obama."
Barack and I lived with an awareness that we ourselves were a provocation.
As she says their names, photos appear of each African-American person.
Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland.
Scene of a young African-American man with his arms raised in front of police.
When you see people gunned down because somebody was so afraid of a kid in a hoodie.
A candlelight vigil.
That ended his life.
Interview.
So how were these people dealing with the fact that a Black family was in what they perceived as their White House?
Candid photo of the Obamas in the Oval Office.
That is the America that we live in.
Vintage black and white photo of a large family.
So if we're gonna get anywhere with each other, we have to be willing to say who we are.
Close up of the African American family in the photo.
I am the former First Lady of the United States and also a descendant of slaves.
Black and white photo of a plantation house.
It's important to keep that truth right there.
Black and white photo of a rundown shack.
My grandfather's grandmother was in bondage.
Vintage photo of an African-American family in front of a ramshackle house.
People have been taught to believe in the ultimate inferiority of people because of the color of their skin.
Candid photo of Michelle hugging Sasha. News footage.
A death threat against the president. DC police looking into an officer threatening Michelle Obama.
Gunshots near the White House.
At least 7 bullets hit the building.
Scene of an officer and police dog scanning the White House press room row by row. Interview.
You hope people were more ready for us than maybe what they were.
Photo of the Obamas at the Lincoln Memorial, smiling and waving. On stage at an arena event.
Barack and I had incredible highs and incredible lows in one day. So on the day that marriage equality became the law of the land, it was a very powerful day. But until I wrote the book, I forgot that that morning we had attended the funeral of men and women who were killed in Bible study in Charleston.
Footage at the funeral held at the College of Charleston. Michelle sits next to Vice President Joe Biden. President Obama is on stage. He looks down at a podium.
Amazing grace.
Everyone jumps to their feet.
How sweet the sound.
Footage of the president comforting the victims' families. Footage of the Obamas later getting out of a car and boarding Air Force One.
So you imagine coming back from that heavy experience, flying in, and then we're at dinner. We hear the sounds of people gathering on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Footage of the crowd outside the rainbow-lit White House.
And we had arranged in advance to have the White House lit up, celebrating the passage of marriage equality.
Footage of a couple getting married on the street.
And we see this happening on TV, and I thought, we are living in this. This is outside of our house. I don't want to watch it on TV. I need to be a part of this celebration after today. I need to be reminded of how much progress we're making. But then I had to get out. So I go to Malia, and she's like, okay, mommy, I'm game, let's do it. So you walk out your door, there's a Secret Service agent out there, and I'm like, tell Malia, don't look him in the eye. Don't say anything. We're just gonna walk. So we get downstairs to that front door, and I go to open it, and it's locked. So I'm literally shaking it, and now more service have been called because they don't know what I'm trying to do.
What is ma'am doing?
What is ma'am doing? Where is she going? She still hasn't told us anything, and nobody really wants to ask you because they're not supposed to ask you where you're going. They're trying to pretend like you have freedom. So... So I turn around and say, I just want to get outside. Help me get outside. I want my daughter and I want, so I'm just like yelling, I get me out of this house. And she's like, okay, I have an idea. And we went around some back steps. We finally got outside. We were like off in a corner and we could just barely see the sides of the lights. But Malia and I were out and I hugged her tight. But that's sometimes how you feel, where it's like, I have to have some indicator that all of this is worth it, that we are moving this country forward.
Next, Michelle arrives at a community event in Chandler, Arizona.
How are you all doing? Hello. Hey.
She joins a group of indigenous students at a round table.
What are you looking forward to in life, and what brings you down?
I don't know, it's just us reservation kids going through universities in the era of Trump. I see, you know, Trump hats every day in classes, and it's just like impacts that you can't really describe, but it's just there subconsciously on a subconscious level. If you could share any, you know, tips or recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine how tough it must be for you all And I want you guys to have perspective as you're going through it and not let this time shape what will be. So you're in school. Be in school. Get your freaking education. You know, Barack and I, all through this presidency, through the lies and the stuff they said about us, all we could do was wake up every day and do our jobs and let our jobs and our lives speak for itself.
Next, she visits an elementary school. Voiceover.
Barack and I are not interested in being at the forefront forever, not even for that much longer.
To the children.
Everybody here is special, right? You know that, right? Well, that's why I'm here.
We got this platform. If you believe in God, God gave us this platform for a reason, so let's not waste it.
She poses for a photo with a mother.
Don't drop the baby.
No.
Oh, thank you.
To college students.
It takes some energy to go high, and we were exhausted from it. Because when you're the first Black anything, you know? So the day I left the White House, I write about how painful it was to sit on that stage. And that a lot of our folks didn't vote. So it was almost like a slap in the face.
Next, Michelle's vehicle crosses the Brooklyn Bridge, a view of Michelle in silhouette as she gazes out the window. Voiceover.
I understand the people who voted for Trump. The people who didn't vote at all, the young people, the women, that's when you think, man, people think this is a game. It wasn't just in this election, but every midterm. Every time Barack didn't get the Congress he needed, that was because our folks didn't show up. After all that work, they just couldn't be bothered to vote at all. That's my trauma.
On stage at the Chicago event.
Being the First Lady has been the greatest joy of my life. But as the first family in the White House, you know, we had to look at whether what we would say in any given moment, what would that mean to the future? What long-term impacts would that have?
Gail.
Your iconic line, when they go low, we go high. Sometimes for many people, it's really hard to hold on to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you still maintain that and still believe that.
I try.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I try. We're only human. When you're president of the United States, words matter. You know, you can start wars, you can crash economies. There's too much power to be that careless. And so that's how we operated, because we had to be bigger and we had to go high. The higher up you go, the higher up you have to be.
Footage of the Obama family walking, holding hands with each other.
We act like it doesn't take a toll on us, but you do not understand what toll it takes on the people around the president.
Footage of Michelle and her young daughters entering a stage to a stadium full of people. Present day, Michelle sits signing a table full of books. Malia comes up and gives her a kiss.
Right. Oh, hey, hi. Little potato.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Oh, hi.
Hi, yeah, you're your.
Too much. I cried again. Oh, it's fun.
No, it's always so. It's always so.
She watches her mother sign the books.
But this is demonstrated in a way. It's just like, damn, those 8 years weren't for nothing. You know? You see that mm-hmm. huge crowd out there, and that last kind of speech you gave about just like people are here because people really believe and love and hope in other people. And also, every time you guys play Stevie Wonder, I don't know, mm-hmm. I cry a little bit. I do.
We're Taylor and Jamie. You're in the car? Everybody's in the car already?
Michelle has not looked up from her signing. Another stack of books is placed on the table. Later, she has signed the last copy. A staff member takes it away. Michelle puts down her pen. Next, she meets with a group of senior women in a church.
Nice to see you all.
Nice to see you.
So what were you all going to talk about?
Because that becoming.
Becoming.
Yeah. I want to eavesdrop.
We saw you last night.
Yes.
And you said that you
miss your spiritual community. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I want to ask our group, mm-hmm. what advice would you give our first ladies? Yes.
The first reaction really is like, you got to find your life again. Mm-hmm. Right. There's so many different phases of you, and a lot of them you forget while you're child rearing mm-hmm. and married and all that kind of stuff. So my advice to you is do just what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Keep on doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. As my mother says, give it some time. And I'm so glad you did not get yourself wrapped up in the fluff of being the first lady
yeah.
and living in the White House, and my husband is.
Your view of me right. matters. Every time we showed up to make you all proud.
Oh, right.
And you did. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you did that.
Mm-hmm. When I saw you on television when y'all was inaugurated, mm-hmm. I said, I never thought that I would ever see
right. Abraham Lincoln. No, my mother said the same
and
thing.
I look back, and my mother and my father never seen it. It was something. I thank you and Barack for
you
that.
You saw it for them.
Yeah. I saw it. Yeah. So it is a blessing.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Yes. I thank you. So God is good.
Hey, you will always be first lady.
I know. You will always be first lady.
First lady.
Forever
you
first
will
lady.
Always be first lady.
Later, she attends a service in the church. Next, in an office, Michelle's staff surprises her with a cake.
Happy birthday to
you guys.
Happy birthday, dear ma'am.
I'm rounding to 60.
She blows out the candles.
Yay!
I can still blow out the candles. Thanks, you guys.
A little gift.
Oh,
yeah.
A gift!
A very not round to 60 gift.
Yep. What happens when you round to 60? Yikes!
She sits at her desk and opens it.
Okay, is it a magnifying glass?
No.
There you go.
Oh, it's a selfie!
Yeah.
They attach her phone to the selfie stick, and she poses for a photo.
Like,
but remember, look at the camera, not the remote.
Okay.
Interview.
What's next in life?
Footage of Michelle addressing a stadium full of college students.
I want to keep working with young people. The future of our nation is up to the next generation. But I know that doesn't just happen. Young people need some encouragement.
You've got my eyelash. You're doing it. All right, get it done, get it done.
After her speech, she mingles with the students.
I love you. You guys are up next, okay? So
Barack and I are empty nesters, and that has been exhilarating to watch the two little beings you were in charge of grow up.
She hugs her daughters and mother backstage, Sasha.
I'm excited for her to be proud of what she's done, because I think that's the most important thing for a human to do, is to be proud of themselves.
Malia.
No longer facing that same scrutiny, being able to let all of that leave your mind creates so much more space.
Montage of scenes of Michelle on tour. She helps her brother with his cufflinks, laughs at something on her phone, dances with her staff, hugs her husband, voiceover.
I want to take care of me, rediscovering my husband. My life is starting to be mine again. There is another chapter waiting for me out there.
At a party, Michelle joins others in a group dance. Next, she sits in a chair, getting her hair and makeup done while she chats with Malia. Next, at a theater, Alan surveys the seating area and consults with other agents during a lighting check. Melissa watches proudly as Michelle poses with fans in front of a backdrop.
I will always love you.
Scenes of fans outside waiting to enter the theater. Everyone looks happy and excited. Individual fans and groups pose for the camera. A diverse audience of men and women of all ages.
The table is prepared for you.
Later, inside, the seats are all full. Backstage, Michelle watches the opening video on a small screen. The video includes photos of the family home and family photos of Michelle's childhood. Marion and Craig are both in the theater audience.
Still, I'll always be there for you. How I do.
Michelle joins Stephen Colbert on stage.
Tonight is the last stop of a 34-city tour.
This is it, y'all. This is it.
What has this journey been like for you? What have you learned, maybe about yourself? And what has surprised you most about your travels?
I've had the rare experience to see the world in this way, which is why it's like I feel like I got to share with you all that, you know, the energy that's out there is much better than what we see. I wish people didn't feel badly because this country is good. People are good. People are decent.
I tell you what I'm nostalgic for. I miss the opportunity we had to have leaders who talk to us about hope and the possibility of change, which is what hope is.
Well, here's what I've learned just in this book tour. You know, one of the things we do miss about Barack Obama is that he would get out into the country and he would campaign around hope and he would fill arenas and then people would come out and remember, yeah.
Various faces in the audience.
I do like this. And then people would be surrounded with each other of all different backgrounds and they'd go, yeah, I'm not alone in this. I like this feeling of not being divided. I do. If we can open up a little bit more to each other and share our stories, our real stories, that's what breaks down barriers. But in order to do that, you have to believe that your story has value. Be vulnerable, dare to be vulnerable. We're at a crossroads of where we have to think about who are we as a nation. I remain hopeful that people want better, if not for themselves, then for the next generation. And that is my basic joy. You know, it gets back to mentoring others. That's what I'm gonna do until people are like, okay, you done, old lady. I'll just be on stage in a wheelchair, just going, and another thing. You know, and it'd be like, ooh, that little old Michelle Obama, she's still just talking, you know. I wanna be the 90-year-old woman that you just excuse, you know.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, join me in thanking Michelle Obama for being here tonight.
Thank you all so much.
Michelle stands and applauds the audience. Credits: audio description provided by Descriptive Video Works, directed by Nadia Hallgren, produced by Katie Cheveny and Marilyn Ness, producer Lauren Kiofi, co-producer Maureen A. Ryan, executive producer Priya Swaminathan and Tonya Davis. Backstage, Michelle and Gail watch a video of a young girl.
I am becoming a strong, confident, fierce girl who realizes that I had the power to change.
Cinematographer Nadia Hallgren, editors Aaron Casper, Nathan Punwar, and Aaron Wickenden, ACE. Michelle watches another video.
I am a non-binary human. And I am becoming brave and unafraid to live openly, truthfully, and joyfully.
Music composed by Kamasi Washington, music supervisor Keir Lehman. Michelle and a moderator watch a video backstage.
I am becoming a mom who is teaching my teenage boys to value and respect strong, smart, independent women.
Thank you.
The next video features a Latino man.
My parents immigrated from Mexico, and because of them, I am becoming a man who is living the American dream.
Michelle Smiles. Supervising editor David Teague. Music consultant Young Turks. Additional cinematography Jared Alterman. Associate producers Haley Goodrich and Simon Mendez. Assistant editor Ariel Davis. Sound recordist Shuling Yang. Locations Interview Washington, D.C. Becoming Live Shows Sunshine, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, and Nashville, Tennessee. Trademark and copyright 2020 HGP Production Company, LLC. All rights reserved. Animated logo, Higher Ground. Animated logo, Big Mouth Productions.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.